From the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com. From the Hill Country.
Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com.
Sorry, I had a little fat finger there this morning. It is Thursday. You're allowed one fat finger, right? There'll be more. Good morning. We're live here this morning, OneRadioNetwork.com. Patrick Timpone is my name, and you know your name, and I'm sure my first guest, Dr. Will Koh, knows his name, so we're pretty good. We're doing good. It's January 10th, 2019. We'll be talking with Andrew Fletcher in southern England next hour. Andrew has spent a whole lifetime telling people about inclined bed therapy, raising the head of your bed. And there's so much to this, much more than just raising your head, for a little. It's a pretty cool thing. We talked to Andrew years ago, and we thought it would be just fine. Thank you very much to do it again. We have so many new listeners, and his podcast is down there buried somewhere amongst the 2,500 podcasts that we do have. So we invited Andrew back on. He'll be here next hour. If you'd like to be on the show, our phone number is 888-663-6386. 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Dr. Will Koh is first up, and Ketotarian, I guess is the way you pronounce it. Ketotarian is the name of the book, and I suspect he was one of the first guys out there with this whole keto thing. And I think the new version now, if I believe that we're talking about, because it's in maybe it's now in paperback. Well, I'll ask him. Should have figured that out before I went on the air. Anyway, he is a pretty interesting fellow. He's a functional medicine guy, and I think it was a chiropractic when he first started, and then he studied a lot of extensive postdoctorate education, functional medicine, clinical nutrition. He consults people around the world through his website, drwillkoh.com. One of his specialties, thyroids and autoimmune, hormonals, digestive things, brain issues. And then somehow he got to be an old ketotarian. And he lives in a beautiful part of the world up there out in the country outside of Pittsburgh. That we had a pleasure of driving up there a few months ago. And boy, quite beautiful. Dr. Koh, good morning. You're up there in Amish country?
I'm more west than the most of the Amish country, but yeah, there are definitely Amish even around outside of Pittsburgh as well. So yes, Pennsylvania has lots of Amish communities.
Yeah, we've had a fellow on several times who lives in Bird in Hand, Pennsylvania.
Yes, I know it well.
Amos Miller, yeah, and he's quite a fellow with all his raw meat and milk and driving the government crazy, they could knock on Amos's door every couple weeks and say, Amos, what are you doing selling that raw milk stuff? Oh my goodness, when did you do you were one of the first guys out with the keto stuff?
Well, the ketogenic diet has been around for a long, long time. Even if you look back in the throughout history, Hippocrates referenced fasting and the benefits of eating, using food as medicine, and referencing the ketogenic diet. And then in the mid-20th century, the ketogenic diet was used for epilepsy and neurological problems. And now in the 21st century, the scientific literature is expanding at the benefits of ketosis beyond just neurological benefits, but just from a lifestyle wellness standpoint, the power that times in ketosis can do for our health. So what I did is I took the ketogenic diet and I made it clean and for the everyday man and woman. It's a plant-based ketogenic kind of clean keto spin on the ketogenic diet. So my play on words, ketotarian, is a plant-based ketogenic diet. So yes, my ketotarian is a made-up word by me.
Yeah. Well, wow. I didn't even realize that. I just got the book and didn't get a chance to read it. So you're doing this whole keto thing without animal fats?
Well, it's just low animal fats. So I wanted to give, because look, if you look at the bookstores and on Amazon there and on social media, there's a lot of conventional keto options for people.
Sure.
And it tends to be a lot of meat and dairy, which is fine and well. But I wanted to offer people a plant-centric way to go keto. So there's vegan keto options, vegetarian keto options. So that brings in things like eggs and ghee and pescatarian keto options. So there's wild-caught fish and shellfish and things like that. But I call it in the book vegetarian. Another play on words. But.
Cool. And, yeah. And when was the hard copy out?
It's in paperback right now. There's no plan to go hardback, but it's glossy cover. It's beautiful, pretty pictures inside of it.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So this is just your first release of it.
Yes, this is the first release of Ketotarian.
Okay. So this idea of being in ketosis. So you say this went back a long time ago. Even would you say 19th century or?
Further back than that, yeah. So going back to Hippocrates, which is the father of modern medicine in Greece, he's the Hippocratic oath that every
sure.
doctor takes. But he referenced fasting, and one of the benefits of fasting is ketosis. It's a way to increase ketosis, this metabolic state allowing your body to do a lot of great things. It upregulates detoxification pathways, it lowers inflammation, and enhances you, allowing your body to burn fat for fuel. But now you can get the benefits of ketosis using a ketogenic diet and eating healthy fats, which we know beyond ketosis, healthy fats are really important for human health. But let's do it in a healthy way. Let's use plant fats like avocados and olives and nuts and seeds and things like this.
Oh, I see. So when you say in a healthy way, are you conjecturing, Doc, that grass-fed like animal fats are not that healthy?
No, I think they can be fine. I just feel most people in the conventional keto world, they're eating anything as long as it's high fat, low carb.
Right, yeah.
You know, as long as it's keto and low carb, they're going to go for it. No, wonderful grass-fed beef and grass-fed dairy can be fantastic. And what I recommend in Ketotarian is to try this plant-based keto thing for 8 weeks. And then if you want to bring in grass-fed beef in after that, then have that, but still be plant-centric. I'm just putting it, I think, in context. I think when I see patients as a functional medicine perspective, I see those things like grass-fed beef or maybe grass-fed cheese as being almost a condiment, so to speak, to being predominantly plant-based. And that's the message that I wanted to get across.
Yeah. And I certainly, no matter what genre, I mean, no matter where you come from in the dietary field these days, it certainly has to be, can be argued that more vegetables and more plants are certainly good for you. I mean, you can't go wrong, right? I mean, you can't go wrong.
Yeah.
With more
Yeah.
So when we fast, just fast with nothing, then the body goes into ketosis?
Yes, yeah. So the ketogenic diet and fasting both produce ketosis. So intermittent fasting or time-restricted feeding is one way to enhance ketosis. So you can use the ketogenic diet and the intermittent fasting together to really amplify the benefits, which is, again, anti-inflammatory, pro-antioxidant pathways, and something called autophagy, which is our body's cellular recycling and detoxification pathways. And both intermittent fasting and ketosis increases autophagy as well.
And so when you're using the term fasting, Dr. Cole, are you using the term pretty in the form of nothing or just water?
Yeah, there's different ways to do it. I think as long as you, for the full autophagy benefits, I would say water would be ideal during fasting and nothing more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some electrolytes.
Mm-hmm.
And something that I do when I intermittent fast is I have some Earl Grey tea when I intermittent fast because Earl Grey tea has bergamot, which is basically a citrus essential oil from Calabria in Italy. And bergamot's been shown to enhance autophagy as well. So these sort of things that I talk about in Ketotarian, you can enhance and amplify the benefits of these modalities that you can do in your life.
Ketotarian is the name of the book, and so it's kind of it's a larger, but it's a soft cover kind of a thing. Yeah, Ketotarian. Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. So talk about this autophagy. What is this? What is it, and how do we get there?
Yeah, so autophagy, all of our bodies do it. It's just when people are going through chronic health problems and when you're living in the standard American way of living and eating, it's a lot of food all the time. Normally it's inflammatory foods, and that downregulates autophagy, or your body's sort of natural cellular recycling. If you break that word down, autophagy, it's autophagy, it's self-eating. It's literally your body's own cannibalism pathways, where the healthy cells gobble up the unhealthy cells, and this makes for healthy cellular fortitude and optimal function. And think of it as almost like an anti-aging mechanism that you can tap into through lifestyle changes. So things like the ketogenic diet, things like plant-based ketogenic diet amplifies it even more. Intermittent fasting, things like bergamot, are all different ways to tap into your body's own detox anti-aging pathways.
Is the bergamot herb or substance, the only place you get it is Earl Grey tea?
No, you can get bergamot essential oil by itself and add it to water. You can add it to other things as well. So it's the bergamot. It's just easy because Earl Grey tea is pretty commonplace. So you can get it long as it's the real essential oil bergamot. Sometimes they add synthetic flavors of bergamot, but make sure it's the real stuff.
So this autophagy idea, when we don't eat, the good guys actually eat up some of the more unwanted characters in our body?
Exactly, yeah. So it is, autophagy is a very powerful tool to decrease disease, increase longevity, decrease inflammation levels, because food and eating food is wondrous. I mean, it's using food as medicine is a foundational principle of functional medicine, is what I write about in Ketotarian. But food does require a lot of energy. Digestion requires a lot of energy. So not starving yourself, but giving your body some breaks, some times to heal is in balance. It's in balance with human physiology. It's what humans would have done for eons. And our genetics haven't changed in over 10,000 years. So eating in alignment or fasting in alignment with our genetics and biochemistry allows your body to do what it was designed to do.
So when we're talking about fasting, many folks are kind of putting out the idea these days of going from like 8 o'clock at night until noon and just don't do anything in between that time, and that would be intermittent fasting?
Certainly, yeah. Or time-restricted feeding is another way to say it. But yeah, basically 12 to 6 is one window, so basically only eat between 12 and 6. You could do 12 to 7, you could do 12 to 8. Just extending that break fast, that breakfast time, where, all right, you can start your day with a lunch and just maybe have water or Earl Grey tea in the morning. These are all time-restricted feedings that are, some exciting research is being done, and things that you can really do simply, and almost anybody can do it.
And the term breakfast, of course, comes from the idea that we break the fast. And when did that start, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think that throughout history, I mean, there's the art of breakfast, and people enjoy the ritual of breakfast. And there's nothing wrong with eating a clean, healthy, real food breakfast. But I think what happens is that the American diet is always stimulating insulin all day, every day, with sugar and things that turn into sugar, and we never give our body a break. The liver and the pancreas and our cells are on constant blood sugar overdrive, and we need to find ways to calm insulin levels, calm inflammation levels, and balance our blood sugar. So if someone's eating breakfast and clean and enjoys breakfast, then do that. And I think a real simple way to do time-restricted feeding is just do the 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. window. And that's just going back to the adage of don't eat too late, and allowing your fast to go through the night and then break the fast at 8 a.m.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's practical.
Yeah, then even if you're going from 6 to 8, you're doing about, 14 hours? And and you'd have some good benefits there, you think. Yeah, we had a lady on yesterday. It was interesting, Doc, who was a really sharp gal out of Florida about stem cells. And she suggested that if you do the 8 p.m. to noon, that your body makes more stem cells during that time if you fast.
Yeah, I would say there's evidence to show that. I think times of fasting, when you're talking about autophagy, and it also increases human growth hormone, which I think goes back to the stem cell upregulation there too. So yeah, it's wondrous what your body can do when you give it the chance to do it.
Dr. Will Cole is with us. His book is called Ketotarian. If you care to join us, 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Doc, what kind of phone do we have you on? It sounds pretty not real clear. You on a cell phone?
I am on a cell phone, yes.
Do you have a landline you could call us from?
I don't have a landline.
Don't do? Do you Skype thing? You got a Skype thing?
I do. I do have a Skype.
Can I give you mine and you want to call me?
Yeah, sure.
Let's do that because it's not as clear as I would like. I would do a commercial. My Skype name is PatrickJ144. PatrickJ144, and we'll do a commercial, and we'll hook up that way, because I'd like to get it clear. We don't have a real good connection.
Yeah, sure.
Cool, okay.
Yeah, and I have a Yeti mic and everything, so I can do that.
Man, with a Yeti mic. This guy's got a Yeti mic, George. I'm just kidding. Okay, we'll do this. Thanks. Here's Master Herbalist Stephen Buhner giving some insights, guys, on why this pine pollen could boost your testosterone levels.
The pollen itself is extremely high in a number of male estrogens, the most potent of which is testosterone, and it's got a fairly high level of it. I mean, it's still in the micrograms, but that's really all the difference between us and women, is that we have this microgram more than they do, and then in the womb, that shifts us into the male developmental pattern. So when we start adding that stuff back in to our bloodstream, which you do if you take that sort of tincture and you hold it in your mouth for a while and then you swallow it, without putting it in any water or anything, it goes right through the mucous membranes into the bloodstream, and so you start to get an increase in the body of actual testosterone, which then circulates to pretty much every cell in the body, and that then begins to increase vitality and muscle strength and everything else.
This is a great product. I've taken it for years. You can click an order, and use your Thrival link, different variations in the pine pollen, potency and price, take your pick. Right here on OneRadioNetwork.com. Yeah, baby, I just got a new shipment in from Daniel 2 days ago. Got a new bottle of pine pollen. Actually ordered two. They were on sale. And some elk velvet antler. Guys, if you're really interested in steaming up your sexual activity a little bit, giving a little boost, a little kick in the pants, a little kick in your giddy up, I can't think of two other products that'll do it as well. We can talk about more tomorrow. I got some other things you can add to it, but it's a pine pollen, elk velvet antler. I think it's a really 1-2 duo that I think your body will like a lot. And any Sir Thrival link, OneRadioNetwork.com, pine pollen and elk velvet antler. Brian Clement, who heads up the Hippocrates Institute in Florida, talked about saunas here. Elky writes in for Brian Clements. Would Brian give us some tips on what supplements we would need to take if we do saunas several times a week to replenish lost minerals from sweating?
Well, Dr. Rao, who you had on, is a colleague and a friend. We do often conferences together in Europe, and I agree. We have saunas here. I take a sauna, so you know this, no matter where I travel in the world, 365 days a year. I think it's mandatory.
Really?
87%, listen closely, okay. 87% more heavy metals and chemicals come out in an infrared.
Well, no wonder we feel better when we take these saunas. We have the Relax Far Infrared Sauna we've talked about on sale through August, $950 delivered continental. Well, that's a kind of a moldy-oldy commercial, but we have it on sale right now. That's right, and it's $995, and they allow us to do it because we're cool, and we can't put that $995 price in print, but we can do it just by email, patrick@oneradionetwork.com, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Yeah, baby, you get heavy metals out. You get all kinds of stuff out when you do the far infrared saunas. I do it virtually every day of my life. I just rarely skip. You see how cute and strong I am? Oh, we don't have a camera. Yeah, really, really, really nice bra, nice unit. You sit in there and you know, put a towel over the chair and do it. So if you'd like to get one, just email me, patrick1radionetwork.com. We ship them all over the world. Believe it, yeah, we do. All over the world, and it's not as much as you think because they ship from the medical university in Taiwan where they make them. They've won a couple awards, by the way, three or four different awards. So you're getting the heat, really intense heat, 160, 170, and then the far infrared rays to go deeper in there. And we know over the years we've been told by they have told us, they say a lot of things. That a lot of the junk and stuff will store into your fat, and you get it out there, a lot of it out when you sweat. Email me, patrick@1radionetwork.com. Okay, I should do the right button here. I'm just having a hard time hitting the right buttons here this morning. Not sure what that's about. Oh.
From the Hill Country in Texas, this is 1radionetwork.com.
Okay, we're talking with Dr. Will Cole, Ketotarian. Dr. Cole, you there?
I am there.
You are there. Boy, you sound great on your little microphone, too. Those whatever, a Yeti mic. That was great when you said, I have a Yeti mic. I said, I don't know what that is, but I want one.
A Yeti mic, yeah. I use that for podcasting. We should have done this from the beginning.
Yeah, we should have. Well, whatever. So let's see. So we've been talking about this idea of the fasting, but when we just do more fats and little or no carbs, is that the same effect of not eating anything?
Yeah, it would be what's considered fasting mimicking, a variation of that. Depending on how many calories or people are eating, you can mimic a lot of the benefits of fasting with the ketogenic diet, especially when you're focusing on real foods. And what I advocate in Ketotarian is mostly plant-based. You can really mimic the benefits of fasting while also getting the phytonutrients and the fiber and the vitamins and minerals from these real foods. So yeah, it's really this amalgamation of all these benefits together.
So can I conjecture then if you're getting in ketosis, say with a plant-based or a clean keto, and then you're doing the intermittent fasting, you're really doing a lot of good things for your body.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So talk about some of these clean plant-based foods that put you in the ketosis.
So the foundation of this ketotarian food pyramid would be plant fats like avocados and avocado oil and olives and olive oil, nuts and seeds, coconut meat, coconut milk, and that's all the vegan keto options.
Yeah.
And then the vegetarian would be, organic pasture-raised eggs, with the amazing egg yolk and all the B vitamins and choline inside the yolk, as well as ghee or clarified butter, yeah. Grass-fed butter, yeah. That has good fat soluble vitamins like K2, and pescatarian options like wild-caught fish. So those are all good, the foundations of this way of eating ketotarian that you would focus on. And then from there, obviously, your greens, your clean proteins, and then low fructose fruits, things like berries and citrus fruits like grapefruit and lemons and limes.
So when your body goes into ketosis, if I understand correctly, Doc, that you're actually then, you're burning fat and not sugar. Is that right?
Exactly, yeah. So the sugar for fuel is like kindling on a fire, right? It's short-lived, so you have to keep putting more kindling on the fire. And that's where most Americans, even if they're eating clean, they're eating things that break down into sugar, and that's ultimately kindling. It's cleaner kindling than the standard American diet, but kindling nonetheless. And then you have the alternative, which is burning fat for fuel, or the ketogenic diet. And that is like a log on the fire. It's more sustainable. It'll burn longer. People are not hangry anymore. You know, hungry and angry is the evil spawn that many people right. find themselves if they miss a meal.
Yeah.
So that's what ketosis is all about. It's eating fat for fuel, but also burning your own fat, because when you lower insulin levels and stabilize your blood sugar, you allow your body to tap into this metabolic state called nutritional ketosis, which allows it to then start burning your own fat as well.
So when you're stabilizing blood sugar, meaning you're not having a lot of big ups, more than what's necessary, say 2 hours after a meal, or dropping a lot when you're not eating, the body, we just feel better when it's stable, don't we?
Absolutely. Yeah. And when you look at the statistics of about 50% of the United States, to some degree, is insulin resistant, whether that's just metabolic syndrome or weight loss resistance to full-blown pre-diabetes and diabetes, we have a blood sugar problem. Mm. And that's largely due to insulin resistance. And this is something that we need to get under control. And the ketogenic diet, especially when you do it with real foods in a plant-centric way, is a great way to really calm down insulin and inflammation.
Yeah. So, you know, in my own case, I feel a lot better the less carbs that I eat, but I tend to lose weight. I'm only 125 now, and I'd like to gain some muscle. I mean, what's going on with the, and I've had other emailers, the same situation, thinner people that actually feel better when they don't do carbs, but that they lose weight when they don't do carbs.
One way to mitigate that is just making sure calorically you're eating enough food.
Yeah.
And a lot of times when people cut carbs, they're also cutting calories. And you need to sort of mitigate the removal of carbohydrates from your diet with just more calories. So when people are making that change of cutting carbohydrates, I would consider food logging, like in a diet yeah. app, like something like Chronometer or something like this, or MyFitnessPal, and then they can kind of see, oh, look, wait, I'm hypocaloric. I'm not eating enough food. I need to actually eat more food. So that's one way to mitigate that, because actually fat is quite calorically dense. So if you're eating enough healthy fats, eating enough protein, and healthy carbs, like lower carb, like vegetables, low starch vegetables, low fructose fruits, you can still have carbohydrates. It's just not the majority of the amount of calories you're getting.
So you're talking about, when we say carbs around here, it would be more like pasta or rice or bread or crackers or something.
Yeah, and that's what most people think of when they think of carbs, right? Yeah, they're making it synonymous with grains. But, I mean, fruit and things like sweet potatoes and carrots, those are carbohydrates as well.
Yeah. So sweet potato is probably one of the more, if you're going to think in terms of this, like you'd like to play with this with your diet, it's more one of the more favorable kind of non-vegetable kind of dense starchy thing that you do rather than white potato.
Yeah, it is. It is higher in vitamins, and it's not a nightshade, which some people with inflammatory problems don't tolerate nightshades, and white potatoes are part of the nightshade family.
So how many, do you eat a lot of avocados in your diet?
Some days, yeah. Some days I do, and some days I have less. But yeah, it's definitely a tool, a food, medicine that you can bring into your life and have it in many different ways. I mean, the cover of Ketotarian is an egg-ocado. It's an egg inside of an avocado. I mean, what more could you ask for right there?
Yeah, man, I tell you.
But yeah, it is a tool, something that I enjoy, yeah.
Uh-huh. Have you found with your people that they do, some of them do better with ghee rather than the real butter stuff?
I do, and I don't have a problem with grass-fed butter. I wanted Ketotarian to be dairy-free, with the exception of ghee. The reason being is, just for being a functional medicine practitioner, what I see in the segment of people that I predominantly consult with, which are people with autoimmune conditions, or they're somewhere on this autoimmune inflammation spectrum where they have a problem with casein, the dairy protein. And even though there's not a lot of it in butter, there's still enough to cause some reactivities in some people. So I find that ghee, or the clarification of the butter, clarified butter, they tend to tolerate more overall. It's just more better tolerated.
Yeah, yeah. If you'd like to be on the show, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Here's an email from Jack. He says, I have an issue with sugar addiction in my entire life. I have the need for something sweet immediately after eating. Do you know of any way a protocol to get my body off these cravings?
I would say becoming fat adapted or keto adapted would get you off of that blood sugar roller coaster, but you have to put the time in and the effort in to make that metabolic shift, because what that will do is create metabolic flexibility, and it will allow those insatiable cravings to dissipate. And it doesn't mean you won't have preferences. You may just like sweet things,
yeah,
but it won't be insatiable, overburdening on people where they just can't resist it. But with that said, if you wanted to enjoy something sweet, let's do it in a way that doesn't spike insulin and doesn't throw your blood sugar off and mess your health up. And I think one way to do that, there's many ways to do it, but one simple way that's very low sugar and high healthy fat, some of the recipes we have in Ketotarian are a fat bomb section. I don't know if you've ever talked about this on the show.
No.
But they're just simple desserts you can make in the little ice cube trays that you put ice in. You would just make these little fat bombs there with a little bit of nut butters and a little bit of ghee or coconut butter. And you can sweeten it up with a little dark chocolate and maybe some xylitol or monk fruit. Mm-hmm. And they're like little creamy chocolate treats. But if you look at the amount of sugar, it's very, very low. So you can still enjoy something sweet. But let's do it in a way that doesn't throw off your blood sugar.
So what do you do? Melt the little fat bomb in some liquid or something, or you just eat the whole fat bomb?
When you freeze them, they are like little chocolate treats, and then you put them in your mouth, and they melt right in your mouth like a chocolate would.
Yeah, this lady yesterday, we really liked her. She was interesting. I think Kristen Camilla, stem cell lady. She said, and she was really funny. She says, "I tell all my friends, I tell people that I meet that if you get off all grains for 3 weeks, I'll pay you $1 million if you don't feel better." So she was being silly. Do you think there's really overall big picture something going on with all this this stuff about grains and lectins, and we really weren't meant to eat all these grains? I mean, what's your opinion?
I think that we all have different tolerances to carbohydrates, mm-hmm, and we all have different tolerances to lectins, and those are the proteins in the grains and legumes and things like that. So from a protein lectin standpoint and a carbohydrate standpoint, like, you know, amylase. So when you look at the sugar and the proteins of grains, there's different genetic polymorphisms or genetic SNPs that predispose people to different tolerance levels and different microbiomes. You look at someone's gut health, that also can play a part into someone's tolerance of it, genetic predispositions for insulin resistance too. So, but as a whole, I think we eat too much of it as a society. I'm not anti-grain. If you have a high tolerance for carbohydrates, and something that I talk about in Ketotarian is if you want to do a cyclical Ketotarian approach, maybe do 4 to 5 days in ketosis, eating plant-based keto, and then the other 2 to 3 days a week, you're moderating your carbs and you're bringing things in like rice or more sweet potatoes or more fruits. And then some people do great with that. That's what humans would have done for a long time. They would have ebbed and flowed depending on what was in season or what was available. I just think when you look at breakfast, lunch, and dinner and everything involves a grain, I think that can be too much for our body. And it's out of alignment with our genetics, which hasn't changed in an estimated 10,000 years. But yet the amount of grains and sugar that we are eating has changed. But then you look at the hybridization of wheat and the genetic modification of certain grains. Uh-huh. That's a whole other ballpark too. And then the spraying, the glyphosate spraying of our grain supply too.
Yeah.
I find that some people do better with grains in Europe where it's not so sprayed and toxic as it is in the United States. So there's a lot of variables to consider. I don't think it's a simple answer. But as a whole, I think it would benefit us to lower the amount of sugar and things that turn into sugar in our diet.
Yeah, just overall. Yeah, and of course we tend to do that on planet Earth, where if something shows up as being a little bit beneficial, well then a lot of folks will demonize it and say, you know, and that kind of thing happens all the time on planet Earth, right? It just it's just part of the deal. This is OneRadioNetwork.com with Dr. Will Cole. His book is called Ketotarian. and he's got a way if you can play around with it. So I'm really, now I'm really interested in looking at the book that they sent me that I didn't read, you can do some fish or some other fats. I'm thinking about some other really clean fats. You mentioned olives and olive oil. Olives are so good. Man, they're really good. They're fun to have, right? You can go to Whole Foods mm-hmm. these days and they have a choice of about 20 different olives too. That's great, man.
And then you look at all these wonderful plant oils too. You can put them yeah. on really anything, like olive oil and avocado oil and macadamia nut oil. There's so many great things to oil your food up.
Yeah, oil it up. And then if you'd like to ask a question, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Let's do a couple of emails here. Let me get to make my mouse do its thing. Here's an email. I've heard that alcoholism can be attributed to a sugar addiction. What are your thoughts on that? Also, can a sugar addiction be responsible for anxiety?
Yeah, so I'm not so sure of the alcoholism and blood sugar problems, but I would say that blood sugar dysregulation is really associated with a lot of cravings. I could see the connection there. And when you're looking at let's just look at the neurological components and the mind, emotional, mental component to alcoholism and to anxiety and depression, and when you talk about anxiety, depression, that drives a lot of people to self-medicate with things like alcohol. But the anxiety, depression, brain fog, these neuro-based problems are in fact inflammatory in nature. There's a whole field of research called the cytokine model of cognitive function. It's really? Basically a fancy way of saying how inflammation impacts how your brain works. And anxiety, depression, brain fog, fatigue, ADD, ADHD, autism are all implicated in these pro-inflammatory pathways. So yes, I think that can drive certain people when they are having runaway anxiety or depression to go to things like alcohol. It's certainly not making the situation any better. We have to calm inflammation. We have to calm insulin levels down and balance our blood sugar.
Do you like doing the A1C test to really get a good picture over several months of how your blood sugar is doing?
Sure, yes. The hemoglobin A1C, the functional optimal range is going to be less than 5.4, which is a lot less than what, you know, they're typically looking at in the standard model of care. And then other things that I look at would be triglycerides. We want that in functional medicine to be under 100. Fasting glucose, we want it under 90. And we also run inflammatory markers like high sensitivity C-reactive protein. We want that under 1. And homocysteine, we want it under 7. So this is a full picture to look in conjunction with A1C, at looking at inflammation and insulin resistance.
Yeah. So there's probably not even a doubt any longer that these numbers that you mentioned, which can be jacked up through some more of the too many complex carbs, right, that had play a role in heart issues.
Oh, certainly, yeah. I mean, you look at heart disease. I mean, insulin resistance amplifies heart disease by leaps and bounds. Actually, insulin resistance is the leading cause of heart attack and stroke in the United States. So you can drastically reduce your risk for heart attack and stroke by increasing insulin sensitivity. And that is lowering insulin levels and lowering inflammation levels in the body.
So when we keep the blood sugar more stable, ongoing, this idea of insulin sensitivity, which is the way it's supposed to work. Explain the difference, say somebody that's, their insulin level thing is working fine with the pancreas or the one that's insulin resistance. What's going on?
Mm-hmm. So insulin resistance is not an insulin production problem because the pancreas, the beta cells of the pancreas are producing insulin just fine. But with insulin resistance, it's actually a cellular problem, namely the liver cells, but it can be peripheral as well. It can be all around the body. But the receptor sites basically are the baseball mitts that are supposed to pick up insulin or any other hormone, but specifically what we're talking about now is insulin receptor sites. Those baseball mitts are blunted, they're dulled, they're like arthritic baseball mitts that aren't able to pick up the hormone or the baseball insulin, so therefore they're insulin resistant. So then the body has to produce more insulin to kind of basically get insulin on those receptor sites that are working. Why? Because you need insulin on the receptor site to allow glucose or blood sugar into the cell, which you need to create ATP, and high blood sugar is toxic to the body. So the body wants to get blood sugar in the cell where it's used to make energy. But insulin resistance is the cellular receptor site blunting or resistance problem. So we have a loss of insulin sensitivity when we have insulin resistance. This is what 50% of the United States has to varying degrees. It's a whole spectrum of it starts with higher triglycerides and weight loss resistance and fatty liver issues all the way to type 2 diabetes. But the other, this is quite different than insulin deficiency, which is type 1 diabetes. That's not even a production of insulin. That's an autoimmune disease that's attacked the pancreas. But this is definitely something that sadly is ubiquitous, type 2 diabetes and metabolic syndrome and insulin resistance. And it's, again, largely reversible, for preventable, overcomable, that you can do something about it. Mm-hmm. And things like a good, clean, ketogenic diet is one way to really help that in a natural way.
If somebody is on insulin type 1, would they benefit from doing a keto diet, in your opinion?
Absolutely. Right. They would want to monitor their glucose levels. They want to make sure they're injecting their insulin appropriately, because they need insulin. They're not producing it, whether they're type 1 diabetic or something called type 1.5 diabetes, or what they call LADA, is late autoimmune diabetes of adulthood. That's sort of a hybrid diabetes. They also should be testing their glucose, making sure that they're taking their insulin appropriately. But when the ketogenic diet, again, done in what we're talking about in Ketotarian, it's very stabilizing to blood sugar. So what type 1 diabetics find is that they are injecting way less insulin. They can be on such low insulin levels because their blood sugar is so stabilized on this way of eating clean. And actually, one of the blurbs in Ketotarian is Dr. Carrie Diulis, who is a type 1 diabetic. She's one of the only pediatric orthopedic surgeons in the United States, and she wrote very kind words about Ketotarian because that's how she eats. And she's seen it work in her life and in her patients' lives.
You seem pretty confident when you said the type 1 diabetes is a autoimmune on the pancreas. You're pretty confident about that? Is there science?
Oh, yes. That is the mechanism. Wow. Absolutely.
So then that could be cured then.
Well, type 1 diabetes, autoimmune conditions, there's no cure for it.
Yeah. Is it just an ongoing infection? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, it's when the immune system attacks the pancreas. So once the genetic predisposition has been triggered and the immune system starts targeting different parts of the body, and type 1 diabetes is just one autoimmune condition. There's over 100 different autoimmune conditions known today, and another 40 above that 100 that at least have an autoimmune component. So it's a lot of people. About 50 million Americans have an autoimmune disease, but one of them is type 1 diabetes. But the goal from a functional medicine standpoint would be to improve someone's health as much as we can. And to be honest with you, there's so much you can do to put these things into remission in many cases, or at least decrease the frequency and intensity of the flare-ups drastically through functional medicine. And that's what I do in my practice. I consult people around the world talking about these things. But with Ketotarian, what I hoped it would be is that people that would never be my patient would be able to take this information in the book and kind of make some positive, healthy choices in their life with this information.
Yeah. Back to the autoimmune, I'm curious. So then is the science, and do you believe then that there's a low-grade infection that folks don't know about that caused this whole thing at the beginning?
Viral infections, bacterial infections can definitely trigger autoimmune problems, not just type 1 diabetes. But it's the perfect storm. It's not just one thing. But what research is pointing to is a confluence of factors. So they estimate that autoimmune conditions are about one-third genetics and two-thirds epigenetics. So there's typically a genetic component. But again, our genetics hasn't changed in 10,000 years. But yet, these genetic predispositions are being awoken like never before because of the epigenetics, because of the two-thirds of the puzzle. So that's things like foods, things like stress, things like toxins, things like viruses, things like mold. A confluence of factors are basically stressing out our genetics. We can't handle all this bombardment all at once. So it's triggering these genetic predispositions for autoimmunity. Viral infections and bacterial infections are two considerations here. But things like intestinal permeability problems or leaky gut syndrome, things like toxins, all of these things can be components to what triggered the specific case that we're talking about.
Yeah. Stay right there, sir. Dr. Will Cole is with us. His book is called Ketotarian. Smart guy, yeah? Ketotarian, K-E-T-O, kind of a dash there. And it's got T-A-R-I-A-N. I think it's Penguin, but I'm sure you can get it on Amazon. This is Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com.
SDL Incorporated is offering three free CDs to listeners of the One Radio Network on the definition of money, the history of the Federal Reserve, and protecting your wealth, which describes in brief how investors can utilize American gold and silver coins as a portion of your portfolio to provide some physical assets to compensate for the loss that most people now see in paper money, which is perpetually losing value. Please call us at 1-800-468-2646 for your free copies. Just mention that you heard it on the One Radio Network show. 1-800-468-2646.
Well, we just know so much now about how important the microbiome and the stomach and the gut and the mouth. Of course, we've done shows on all of those areas, small intestines and large intestines. And we have got together with Wayne Blakely, I guess about 3, 4, 5 months ago. And he has an incredible line of Living Streams probiotics. There's about 14 different kinds because he's got very creative and mixed some of these different probiotics with various herbs like alfalfa or moringa or C60. That one's called the perfect molecule. He's got the Bifido and the Bifido 2. And these are human DNA kind of thing, probiotics. So they're just right for people. They don't come from, they're just human DNA things. They have a Living Stream pet probiotics. I've been playing around with putting the Bifido 2, which is a certain kind of Bifido. I had it here. Well, I won't go into it now, which kind of Bifidum Longum Infantis, six different Bifido products, and you can do it for kids or put it 3 drops in each ear and allow it to get inside the ear and massage it in, and this little guy will go all the way down to there to the small intestines. And not get eat up by the hydrochloric acid of the stomach. You can do a lot of these probiotics right in your ear, and just a 2 or 3 drops, and it'll go right down there. And there's something interesting going on with that. I've been doing it for about 2 weeks. Can't tell you exactly, but something good. You know, I just, you know, something better and better keeps happening with my digestive system. So, I mean, it's pretty complicated stuff, and who knows? So, I experiment a lot, but. You can talk to a lady by the name of Maryland. Her telephone number is 360-912-2981, 360-912-2981. And she can answer some of your questions. We don't give medical advice, and we don't make any claims that this is going to cure that and all that. The body does all the stuff, and these probiotics, of course, just help the body do what it's kind of meant to do. So it's pretty cool, and I just open up the fridge, and I put in all different kinds in my water, and the perfect molecule is C60, the Shabide. This will help you sleep. A very, very nice product. These are our Living Streams probiotics. They're in our store, all of the products in our store. Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. If I can offer some insights, or you can talk to Maryland at 360-912-2981, Living Streams. Previously, we talked with Brandon Amalani about his Blue Shield product to protect against EMFs in your home.
The more connected we are, the more electromagnetic radiation we're going to have. So years ago, I'd play with Q-Links and just anything I can get my hands on that, whether I felt it working or not, I just wanted some kind of leverage against electromagnetic radiation and those frequencies and how they affect the cellular biology. But then when I met Mark and started really getting deep to his technology and really looking at the microprocessing technology, I've never found any EMF company that would not only to test on not only human blood and urine analysis, but also on animals, which totally weeds out the idea of placebo effect. I mean, the fact that you can plug these devices into a chicken farm, a factory farm, for about 15,000 laying hens, and all of a sudden the mortality rate, which is averages from 60 to 150 deaths per month, goes down to zero. I mean, it's pretty profound that a little device, a little energy device, could actually like create such a harmony and balance within the environment, to where claustrophobic chickens that are crammed in together actually get along better and actually feel better, and the biological markers are improved over that 1 year study.
There's quite a bit of science with this Blue Shield product. You can see the ad on the front page. Promo code One Radio will get you a 10% discount. This works on the cells in the body. Very cool technology. Front page, Blue Shield, OneRadioNetwork.com.
From the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Having a fun conversation with Dr. Will Cole about his book and his work, Ketotarian. Doc, you do consults all over the world, and I think that folks could find you through your website, drwillcole.com. Is that right?
Yeah, everything's at drwillcole.com.
Yeah. Here's an email from Emily. I'm in a situation much like Patrick, where if I just don't eat some kind of complex carbs, I just lose too much weight. And so if I were going to continue to eat some rice, can the doctor recommend the best time of the day to do that? Well, that's an interesting question. Good for you. You're thinking.
Okay. That's a great question.
That's great, isn't it?
So I love doing, and what I recommend in Ketotarian is, if you're not going to have carbs, to leverage the benefits of carbohydrates by having them for dinner in the evening, because they will help you sleep. They will they have that calming, relaxing, when people get really tired after Thanksgiving dinner, that sort of added just largely from carbohydrates. So you can do that and help you sleep at night.
Uh-huh. Now, when we, if we want to get one of these little blood sugar, what do you call these things you get at the Walgreens? Or what do you call those things?
Glucometers.
A glucometer, yeah, they're real. They practically give them away now because they sell you the little strips, right?
It's the strips that are expensive. Yeah.
Is there anything that Dr. Cole, that's worth playing around with or looking at as far as checking that 1, 2, or 3 hours after we eat, or fasting blood sugar? Do we learn anything by that?
I think that what I recommend in Ketotarian is, if you want to keep it simple, just go off of how you feel. And I think some people like to keep it simple and just say, hey, does this make me feel better? But then there are a lot of people that are interested in health and wellness, and they're maybe biohackers in that way, where they do want to look at the numbers and see where their numbers are at and get an additional layer of how they feel, a more objective perspective. I think a simple glucometer can be one way to look at your fasting glucose, look at your postprandial, like after you eat, where does that go? But you can get that, a lot of that information, with a ketone meter. That can give you ketones, see if your body's producing ketones, and also it'll give you glucose as well. So you can see glucose and ketones on a ketone meter. I love the keto breath meter as well, where that does not give you glucose, but it gives you ketones, and you don't have to prick your finger, and you can just breathe into the meter, and it tells you if you're producing ketones with the keto breath meter.
I'll be done. Yeah, I got one of those keto meters years ago, but I found that they were really expensive to get the strips. I suspect that they're not as expensive now.
Yeah, the prices have gone down probably a little bit, because just with supply and demand. Sure. But the keto meter, breath meter, you don't need strips. You just breathe right into it. So you pay more for the actual breath meter, but it's a one-time cost. There's a few different companies that sell them. But if for people that want an alternative for the blood. Now, the blood is still considered the gold standard. Like what you had with the strips is still considered the gold standard. But other people like the breath alternative.
2 or 3 hours after eating, is there some kind of reference numbers that we could kind of look at for those biohackers that want to look at numbers?
Sure. I would say you would want to test your blood sugar right before you ate. And then look at 2 hours later, you should be back to your baseline, which for most people should be under 120. That shows insulin sensitivity. Your body has been able to shuttle the glucose into the cells.
Oh, so say if it's 100 and then you eat 2 hours later, it should be back at 100.
Exactly.
And if it's not, that means that you could use a little work to help to heal up the insulin resistance thing?
In most cases, that's what it signifies. And you'd want to look at other numbers too, but and track trends. You know, it's never good to hang your hat on one time, but get a good consistent view of where your physiology is. And then if you see it being off and it's not coming back down, then at that point, I would recommend running more labs like the ones we just talked about, like triglycerides, the A1C, and the inflammatory markers to kind of see if insulin resistance is an issue or not.
Does your guest here, Steve, some people have discovered that the glucose tolerance factor, GTF chromium, is required cofactor to load glucose into the cells. Insulin transport glucose to the cells, but GTF chromium is needed to use it. Otherwise, the glucose just piles up in the blood. Does your guest agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Chromium is, and just from supplemental chromium or using food that includes chromium, that is one way to improve glucose transport, improve insulin sensitivity, certainly.
And there's certain foods that have chromium?
Yeah, I mean, nuts and seeds would have them, wild-caught fish. I mean, they're all varying amounts of them. But again, the focusing on these nutrient-dense, real foods is a really great way to get these minerals, get these essential elements that you need to give your body the cofactors, to provide the body the raw materials it needs to produce these healthy pathways.
George wants to know, does Dr. Cole think that there is a connection between blood sugar, insulin, and hypothyroidism?
Yeah, there is a connection there in both ways. I think if your thyroid's off, that's going to influence your blood sugar. And conversely, hyperinsulinemia or insulin resistance, like too much insulin in the blood, is not good for thyroid conversion and production. So your body predominantly produces T4, the tyrosine protein with 4 iodine molecules on it. That's largely inactive. The body has to then convert T4 to T3. And that happens in the liver. It happens in the gut. 80% of the conversion of T4 to T3 happens in the liver, and 20% happens in the microbiome. But if your body's insulin resistant, that's in the liver predominantly. And if you have fatty liver issues and other problems that are associated with insulin resistance, that can, in theory, inhibit T4 to T3 conversion. So it's a bidirectional relationship between insulin resistance and thyroid problems, and they both kind of have this negative feedback loop.
Boy, sometimes you got to get really biohacking geeky to figure some of this stuff out. Huh?
and you can get a good functional medicine doctor that can kind of decode some of this stuff because it can be overwhelming. And sometimes you don't have to be super geeky about it. You can just keep it simple. But a lot of times people have to dig in deeper to these root causes of why they're struggling.
Indeed. Dr. Cole, what's your opinion of exogenous ketones? And how to use them. What is exogenous ketones?
Exogenous ketones is different than endogenous ketones in the sense of endogenous ketones are what your body naturally produces in ketosis. Exogenous ketones is something you get from a supplement. You would take like beta-hydroxybutyrate, salts like or MCT oil. These are normally put into powders or in liquids, and people put them in drinks or take them. I think it's one way to enhance the benefits of ketosis. I don't think it's needed in most cases. But if people want to, for example, enhance the amount of ketones in their blood to maybe improve brain function or energy levels, then that's something they can try. But look, food is always primary medicine. And from there, you can start using these things to maybe enhance your ketone level in your blood to amplify the benefits of it. And there's some great products out there as far as exogenous ketones go.
So that's what it means if you just do an extra. I often wonder what the MCT oil was used for. I see it on the shelf. Is that what it's used for?
Yeah, predominantly MCT oil or medium chain triglyceride oil. It's from coconut oil and palm oil, but it's just a high dose of these medium chain fats, which are very bioavailable, and they don't have to go through the liver for processing, and they can go right past through the blood-brain barrier and kind of provide the brain clean fuel. So people use it for kind of these extra benefits of ketosis. But really, your body will naturally do this anyways with the clean ketogenic diet. This is just icing on the cake, but the sugar-free, healthy cake, you know.
Wes wants to know that if he can have coffee in the morning and still be fasting.
Yes, you can, because fasting you're not going to fully break the fast if you're not stimulating insulin. So obviously I wouldn't put sugar in the coffee.
Or
I wouldn't
cream.
Even put creamer in it, really. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Be as low stimulating on insulin and digestion as possible. But coffee can be a great way to do that. And you can add a little bergamot oil in that if you want to enhance autophagy. But yeah, so that's a fine alternative.
Well, final one, then we'll let you go back to work. Would you please ask your guest his idea on Freestyle Libre system? Do you know what that is?
I believe Freestyle Libre is a type of a ketone meter. I could be wrong on that, and or glucose meter.
Sounds like it is.
Those are fine. I've heard good things of them. I don't have any personal experience with them, but I've heard great things from different people in the keto world.
In the keto world, and there's more and more people doing keto. Doc's book is called Ketotarian, Ketotarian, Dr. Will Cole. I suspect you're on Amazon and all the usual suspect places, Doc?
Yeah, we are. And we're actually in the top, 100 of all books on Amazon right now, which is, out of 8 million books, is doing pretty good.
Cool. That's great. Good for you. Congratulations. And the website is drwillcole.com. He's got a Facebook thing, Dr. Will Cole, and chatted up with him. And well, thanks for being on the show, and have a happy and prosperous new year.
Thank you. You too.
Yeah, enjoyed it. Thank you, Dr. Will Cole. And we are going to incline our bed here and just get all gooey and incline. We're going to have some fun with inclined bed therapy guru, Andrew Fletcher. But to make the switch over, because he's on Skype too, I'm going to need to sneak in a little commercial. But this is great. If you haven't tried this product, if you haven't tried this product, it's really, really good. Listen. Previously, we talked with Dr. Rulin Zhu about using Pearlseum on your teeth.
You have to experience it. You'll believe it.
Yeah, you do. That's what I've been saying to my listeners. I keep saying, can't even explain this. Just buy it. Just click on it. Buy some. Trust me. Just trust me. And you're going to like the way your teeth look. That's what I keep telling.
Dentists, they did an experiment on their clients, and they literally show the picture every day. You know, when they take it in a few days, their tooth literally become, like you said, like a pearl, and it looks so beautiful and really white and shiny. Yeah, it really works, and it's also scientifically proven by the experiment. And he literally proved it is not only good for your teeth, he also proved it's also good for your gum.
Try some of this Pearlseum. I think you're going to love it. You can try it internally as well. Helps with sleep. Great way to get absorbable calcium, and also on your face. You'll see the green ad there, the beautiful green container. Get the capsules or the powder. Pearlseum. Click and order. OneRadioNetwork.com.